Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Apura Kanu Apurai Kaitnut, ene ye egwada medinde ojirapo kwesi ra nehemputa akan. Akwamu maira maruka etibimu ojirapo. That means greetings to all Apura Kani Apurai Kaitnut people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Egwa Day, Marketplace Day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi ra nehemputa akan. Ojirapo of the Akwamu Nation in North America. Yet I say for everyone tuning in, we thank you for tuning in once again to the show. If you are in the chat room as a guest and you want to interact as far as making comments or asking questions in the chat room, you must log in with a username. If you don't have a username, you can sign up for one very quickly in Blog Talk. If you have a question or comment on the phone line, then you can just hit the number 1 and we can call on you. We can see your hand is raised. So, I'll say we thank you once again, Mepo Cho. We apologize for the late notice. We had initially planned to reschedule tonight's show. We had to reschedule Monday's show this week. This particular week was we had some other scheduling conflicts. So we did reschedule Monday night's show. We did yesterday's show, Ojira, and we were going to reschedule tonight, but then at the last minute, we were able to go ahead and, you know, move forward with the show. This is why we started at a later time at 9:30 instead of the regular 9 o'clock Eastern time. So, get out there. We appreciate everyone tuning in at this last minute. So what we want to go through, what we're going to deal with, is we're going to deal with Obrapo, which in our Akan culture deals with ethical life. But we're going to deal with it in the context of institution building, because when we do Egwa Da or Egwa Day, Marketplace Day, when we've had many individuals come on talking about their businesses, products, services, organizations, wherein they serve the Apura Kani Apura Kaini community, good products, good services, organizations, and so forth. But we always choose individuals who also share our ancestral values at the same time. So whether they have a business, an institution, it's something that shares the ancestral value. So that's key for the kinds of guests that we typically bring on. So we wanted to talk about the nature of Obrapo, the way we fashion our life, ethical life, in the context of institution building. And that also has to do with the marketplace, that has to do with business, that has to do with education, has to do with products and services. But based on the ethical foundation for the way we approach institution building. So we want to get into that and lay that out. First, I want to make sure that everybody got that message. So just give me a second. What you can do, we're going to put the link in the chat room right quick. You can go to our major text we're going to deal with is our Mate Matie. So we're going to put that link in the chat room right now. Mate Matie page. And that, of course, is one of our 15 books, and we're going to put the link to the Nhoma page as well. The Nhoma page is where all of our books are. One of them is Mate Matie, The Ancestorhood of Nana Yao, Dr. Bobby E. Wright, dealing with ethical life, Obrapo, and so forth. So that's the link. You can go to that page link, and then you can go and you can download the ebook version of the book. So you can check that out. All of the ebook versions of our books for individuals who are new to the broadcast. We have 15 books published in soft cover and in the ebook versions. The ebook versions of all of our books are free downloads. We make them available free as free downloads. The soft cover versions, we do sell the soft cover versions. They range between $8 and $11. We print our own books in-house and in color on our own printers, and we try to make the prices reasonable as possible, so that between $8 and $11, we have 15 books various different subject matter. Apuraka, Afuraka is the origin of the term Africa. Maraneji, divine law and divine hate, the origin of the term God, the nature of, you know, Kukutumtum, the ancestral jurisdiction, dealing with the origin of the fictional characters of the Bible, the Quran, Talmud, and so forth. So we have a number of different books, groundbreaking research. So you can check that out on the Unhoma page, on the Unhoma link. One of those texts is the Mate Matie, the Ancestorhood of Nana Yao, Dr. Bobby E. Wright. So what we did with this particular text is we took seven Adinkra symbols from Akan culture. When you see the Adinkra symbols, Sankofa is one of the more popular Adinkra symbols, but there are hundreds of Adinkra symbols that represent various aspects of our culture. We use those Adinkra symbols. Everyone, it has an epe or a divine wisdom teaching, ancestral wisdom teaching associated with it, so-called proverb, but these are divine ancestral wisdom teachings, transference of knowledge through these symbols. So when you see the symbol itself, automatically you are reminded of the wisdom, the ancestral wisdom that's associated with the symbol. In addition to that, the symbols themselves, their geometric forms carry power. So we understand that when you have formed any kind of geometric pattern in space, when energy moves through that pattern, it generates a specific kind of field of energy. So for example, if you have a battery and you have a wire, two ends of the wire connected to the two poles of the battery, you connect them, then the current moves through the wire. If you take the wire and wrap it around in a circular fashion, for example, wrapping it around a nail, but even just wrapping it around in a circular fashion over and over and over again, and still stick both ends of the wire to the two poles of the battery, as the current moves through the circular form and circles over and over and over again through that form and zips through that circular pattern, it generates an electromagnetic field. And this is why if you wrap a nail with wire, ends of the wire to a battery source, then as that electromagnetic current is circulating through that circular form, it generates a magnetic field, and now the nail becomes a magnet, and you can use the nail to pick up paper clips and so forth. So when energy moves through a geometric pattern, a geometric form, based on the qualities of that form, it generates a specific configuration of energy and a specific kind of field, an electromagnetic field. That field that emanates from the form, the geometric form or pattern, we can pick up on that. It can affect us, and it does affect us. This is why we have Adinkra symbols drawn in specific forms, because they generate a specific configuration of energy that will inform us in a quantifiable fashion. This is the basis of the Medutu, so-called hieroglyphs in ancient Kemet, the basis of Adinkra symbols in Akan culture, is the basis of the writing systems that you find all over Afuraka, Afurakai, and they're actually all related. So when you look at the Medutu, when you look at the Adinkra symbols, when you look at the symbols written by the Ndebele people and so forth, or various people across the continent, the Vai symbols and so forth, you'll find similar symbols being used with similar meaning across the board, because they're all based on the same pattern. When we talk about Tehuti, the Abosom Tehuti, the male force of divine wisdom, and we talk about Seshat, the female force Abosom of divine wisdom, called Bre Chirinhuruate and Abrewa in Akan tradition, this male and female force, when we talk about them teaching us the Medutu, the hieroglyphic symbols, as we said previously, that is a literal statement. When the Abosom possesses, and then they ask for something to write, and they write symbols, draw symbols in the sand, take a stick and draw symbols into the ground, and enunciate the name of that symbol, and attach a specific meaning to it and show what that symbol means, the energy that emanates from that symbol, it affects us in a certain way and it affects our consciousness, and we can therefore read that symbol based on the energy that comes forth from it. This is the same as Veves in the Vodun tradition and so forth. When we say that they showed us the symbols and taught us how to write, that is a literal state. These are both on possess then and they possess now. We communicated with them then and they communicate with us now. They taught us divination then and they communicate with us through divination today. The exact same Abosom, the exact same Orisha, the exact same Vodou, the same Ntorotu from ancient Kemet. So when we have these Adinkra symbols, all of that is encoded within these symbols. They're not just artistic renditions of, you know, different things. They carry power, the symbols themselves. And when your life force energy emanates from you and apprehends that symbol, and just like you can take a pen and draw and trace an Adinkra symbol, when your life force energy leaves you and apprehends that symbol and circulates through a specific pattern, it generates the field that's described by that pattern. And then that field affects you. The emanations from that field, of that from that geometric pattern, affects your body, affects your spirit, affects your consciousness, and informs you of certain aspects of nature that you need to be informed about. So this is what the Adinkra symbols are about. We have seven Adinkra symbols that we extracted from the corpus of hundreds of Adinkra symbols, seven of them that represent ethical existence. And we describe those symbols in this particular book, in the Mate Matie. And then we compare that ancestral wisdom with the thoughts and formulations of Dr. Bobby E. Wright, who was a Black nationalist psychologist on the forefront of that back in the 80s and so forth before he made his transition. So we kind of dedicated that work to show the parallels between the ancient wisdom and what he was teaching. So we're going to deal with a few of those symbols today, dealing with ethical existence in relationship to institution building. So you can, for the new people who came in, you can download the book, the Mate Matie. We put the link in the chat room. So, but first, before we get to aspects of it, institution building is a component of Amain Setsu, of nation building. So in Akwamu Mai, in the Akwamu Nation in North America, when we talk about Amain Setsu or nation building, nation restoration, we talk about seven principal values of Amain Setsu or nation building restoration. It's not just food, clothing, shelter, and safety. Nation building is more than that. So we talk about seven principal values. The seven principal values of Amain Setsu stream from the divine and ancestral forces that govern all cycles. The solar, lunar, and planetary bodies which govern the 7 days of the week. Of course, the Akan 7 day week, this is where the whites in our spring learned about the 7 day week from Afurakani Afurakani people. Akan people still use, of course, that 7 day week. The solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern the 7 days, that determine the character of each one of the days and affect the earth in a fashion that defines those days on earth. There are abosom forces in nature that animate the solar, lunar, and planetary bodies. And that governs our 7 day week. So, but they also govern all natural cycle. Of course, the Earth Mother is part of the solar system, which is part of a larger system. So we're moving through cycles. It's a cyclical manifestation of energy. If you look at not only the 7 day week, but we talked about previously the Circa Septin cycle, which deals with chronobiology. That's just a term that the White Nile Spring decided to create to address this. But there's a circle, which they believe that they recently discovered, and they call it the field of chronobiology, and they'll call one of the cycles the circadian rhythms that your body goes through. One of them is called the Circa Septin cycle, which means about 7 days. And there's a cyclical manifestation of renewal every 7 days with regard to cells, with regard to organs, even with regard to when people get transplants, and every 7 days you can determine whether or not the body's going to accept the transplant or not, because it's a 7 day cycle. So it's a Circa Septin cycle that governs our biology, our biological rhythms, our circadian rhythms in the body, doing digestion and everything else. That's directly tied to the 7 days of the week. that govern all natural cycles on Earth. So therefore, since you have Abosom, forces in nature that animate the sun, animate the moon, animate the various planets, those same Abosom or forces in nature, we call them Abosom in the Akan tradition, they're called Orisha in Yoruba and the Vodou, Fon, and Ebe culture, and Arusi or Alusi in Igbo tradition, in ancient Kemet, of course, Ntoru, Ntorotu, mispronounced sometimes Neteru or Netertu, Ntoru, Ntorotu, the forces in nature, the deities, the goddesses and gods. And in Akan culture, of course, we also use the term Ntoro, Ntoro, which is the exact same term as well, to designate the Abosom, another designation for them. Because these forces in nature that animate the solar, lunar, planetary body, they also animate these various cycles. So this holistic cycle that we are a part of, the 7 days of the week, solar, lunar, planetary bodies, they govern the 7 days of the week and the seasons and so forth on Earth, also affect our bodies, but then also even internally you have that chronobiological circadian rhythm, the circa septon cycle that renews itself every 7 days within your body. It's from the microcosm, the body, to the macrocosm, the solar system. If you have these forces in nature that govern all cycles, whether it's on the Earth itself as well as inside of your body, then you will want to draw on the Abosom that govern all holistic cycles to give input into any event that you're going to plan to engage in, any activity, any institution building, any structure, anything that you're establishing. You want to have the forces in nature that govern all cycles in a holistic fashion to give their input into your structure that you're forming, that you're trying to develop. This is where the seven principal values of Amayensesu come from. If we're going to talk about what would be a holistic approach to nation building, nation restoration, it makes sense, it's wise to attune to the actual forces in nature that regulate all cycles in a holistic fashion so that when we nation build, we have all the tools we need to have a holistic structure, a holistic nation. So this is where they come from. So we talk about first, methods of food production and preservation. So you, of course, if you're going to have an independent, sovereign nation, you must be able to feed yourself. You must have methods of food production and preservation. Second, you need to have methods of curing disease. Natural methods, of course. Of course, we founded medicine, surgery, all those different things. We need to have that expertise. Third, you need to have a military structure to defend ourselves, protect ourselves, and establish a sovereign entity. You must defend that sovereign entity. You can feed yourself, you can cure yourself, but you must be able to defend yourself. And we, of course, when we're intelligent, as wise Afurakane Afurakaini people, we understand that just as cancerous cells attack healthy cells in the body on a consistent basis, but you have an immune system and lymphatic system in place to destroy those cells, arrest their development, kill them, and expel them from the body, the same is true when we establish a sovereign entity. The whites and their offspring, without fail, will attempt to destroy anything we build. Not because we provoke them, but because that is their nature, their ill nature, as cancerous cells. That is their nature. So they will come to try to destroy it. So, of course, if you're intelligent, you're wise, and you draw on your ancestral wisdom and experience, you're going to have a structure in place to defend yourself from the enemy and to eradicate the enemy. So that's third. Fourth, the institutionalization of values, building institutions. You have to have institutions to teach and train for food production and preservation. You have to have institutions that teach curing disease. You have to have institutions that train for military exercises and a military structure. You have to have institutions for government that train people in that, training in engineering, training in textiles and so forth. That's for those sciences and so forth, but also cultural institutions where you transfer knowledge of the culture to everyone in the nation and to our posterity. Transmitting the values, institutionalizing the values, cultural ritual practices institutionalize values, refresh and renew the values within the people on a consistent basis. We harmonize with the abosom, the forces in nature, and the nananom and samampo, the ancestresses and ancestors who are spiritually cultivated. Then we renew our alignment with divine order. We renew our consciousness of the values. Why are we here? What is our function in the world? Why is it important? Why are we motivated to engage in life in a certain way and repulse from engaging life in another way? What are our values? What is important to us? What is necessary for us to function in a harmonious fashion without creating disorder in ourselves, in the community, and in Asase Ahua, Asase Yah, the Earth Mother, Mothers, in general. So you have to institutionalize your values. So that's the key, and we want to focus on that tonight because we're talking about institution building from an ethical perspective platform. But just to go further, that's the fourth principle value. Fifth principle value is establishing sound systems of governance and jurisprudence. So when you have a nation, you can feed yourself, you can clothe yourself, you can feed yourself, cure yourself, you can defend yourself. You've established institutions to transfer knowledge from throughout the nation and in our, you know, for our progeny and so forth. But you have to have sound systems of governance and jurisprudence so that you can manage dynamic relationships. So one dispute doesn't lead to the destruction of the nation, anarchy and war and so forth. That's unnecessary. That's the fifth principle value. Sixth principle value deals with acquisition of land and, of course, building homes, shelter on acquired land. So acquiring land and building homes, engineering and so forth, of course, shelter is. And then the seventh principle value deals with the manufacturing of clothing. So, of course, you have to clothe yourself. Of course, you have to shelter yourself, food, defend yourself. But the key piece is dealing with curing yourself of disease. Systems of governance and jurisprudence and institution building, the transfer of knowledge, institutionalization of our values. So people, when they understand the values, they understand how important the nation is, why it's valuable, why everything that's done in the nation is valuable, why it even exists, what its value is, that's internalized and recognized consciously. And so therefore, people will seek to not only defend the nation when they understand its value, its intrinsic value, and they can attune to that. It's not just something being told, but they can recognize and attune to the value of the nation. When they understand that, not only will they defend it, but they will also seek to perpetuate it and perfect it intergenerationally and transcarnationally. So those are the seven principal values of Amai Sesu nation building as we approach it in a holistic fashion in Akwamu Mai and Amaru Kai Tifimu in the Akwamu Nation in North America. But of course, these principal values are timeless and they cut across all Afurakani Afurakai people. We have our own language that we use to express them, but the approach is the same. We attune to the forces in nature that regulate all cycles in harmony in a holistic fashion, and we draw on their energy to create any kind of institution. The earth itself is an institution. It's a harmoniously structured institution. When we structure any institution in a microcosm, it should be a harmoniously structured institution, a holistically structured institution. And the only way you can get to that is to attune to the forces that govern creation, who are the embodiments of divine order. And then you can replicate the order that exudes from them when you're structuring your society, structuring your nation, structuring an event, structuring an institution, cultural institution, or physical establishment, whatever it is. So that's the basis of Amai Sesu nation building or restoration, because for us it's both. It's building, but it's also restoration. Because we are an Amai. We are a nation away from Afuraka, Afuraikai, away from home. We must reestablish and restore who we are. Of course, first internally, spiritually, culturally, and then on some land. So, but we want to get into the fourth principle value, which is the institutionalization of values, building institutions. That fourth, as as we said, it's seven principal values. They're governed by the 7 days of the week, the abosum of the 7 days of the week. The fourth principal value, the fourth day of the week, is Awukuda or Akuada Wednesday. The abosum that govern Wednesday or Awukuda Akuada is Awuku and Akua, which is Set and Nebuhad in ancient Kemet. It's Awuku and Akua and Akan, Eshu and Agberu, the wife of Eshu in the Yoruba tradition. Legba and Koni Koni in the Vodun tradition and so forth, these forces in nature. If you look at the image that we use as the image for the show tonight, it's actually the top, that golden image that you see next to my image is the top of an mpoma, of a staff, and it's actually really an Adinkra symbol. It is Anansi, the spider, Kweku Anansi, on an ntontai, on a web, but that's just not a symbol of a spider on a web. It is an epe. There's a divine wisdom teaching associated with that. And the teaching is no one goes to the house of Anansi to teach it wisdom. And when people understand that, because they understand the story of how the Nyakun Sem, the stories of the creator, creatress, Nyakun Pong, became called Anansi Sem, the stories of Anansi. Anansi, because of what he did and what he achieved, he met and passed certain tests and overcame certain obstacles. He became the owner of all stories of Nyankumpong and Nyankumpong, the creator and creatress. This is why he's the messenger of the creator and creatress, going back and forth from the heavenly realm to the earthly realm to communicate dictates of the Abosom, the supreme being, the Nananoman Samafa to us, and carrying our communications to them. And then you have, of course, Akua, or Nebuhet. Just like Anansi carries the prayers, the communications back and forth, Akua or Nebuhet carries the offerings that we give back and forth from the physical world to the spirit realm to the Nananoman Samafo to the Abosom. This is why in ancient Kemet you'll see that Nebuhet is distinguished by the bowl that she has on her head because she carries those ritual offerings. She is called Akua in Akan. She's also, one of the praise names for her, Mrane, is Kukua. But Kukua is also the term for an earthen vessel because she's the one that carries the vessel on her head and carries the offerings from the physical world to the spirit realm when we're making those sacred offerings to the Abosom, to the Nsamafo to communicate. Then you find that Agberu, the wife of Eshu in the Yoruba tradition, this female Orisha that's not very often talked about. People talk about Eshu, the trickster, and the messenger, and so forth, but they don't talk about Agberu. Eshu is the husband of Agberu. Agberu literally means the load bearer. When you see the Yoruba women with the bowls on their head, and they're carrying the contents of the bowl on their head, and balancing the bowl on their head, when you look at them, and then you look at Nebuhet in ancient Kemet with the bowl on her head, and then you see Akua, whose praise name is Kukua, but Kukua also means the earthen vessel. We're talking about the same divinity. In Yoruba tradition, Agberu is the female Orisha who carries the offerings in her little vessel from Aye to Orun, from the heavenly, from the earth to the heavenly realm. Same divinity with the same headdress, the same function in creation, same spouse across the board in the various cultures because we're dealing with the same divinity. This is the day of Awuku. This is why we, and Akua, Set and Nebuhet. This is also why we deal with them with regard to the marketplace because they're the communicators dealing with media of exchange. Speech is a media of exchange. Money is a media of exchange. So when we talk about offerings, media of exchange, exchanging energy, exchanging value. This is why we have Egua Marketplace Day on this day. The fourth principal value of Amain Sesu is institution building. And, of course, it's on their day. So they govern this piece, and this is why we want to do this on this day. So when we say institutions, building institutions, transferring knowledge, intergenerationally, transcarnationally, transferring the values of the culture, instilling the values of the culture within the people, inculcating those values within the people, renewing those values within the people through physical institutions as well as cultural institutions such as holidays, ritual practices, religious practices, and so forth. so that people understand the value of what we are doing, what their function in creation is, why it's important, why they should stay away from certain things and be attracted to other things, and why the structures that we build and establish are important. And once they value them in their hearts, then they will not only protect them and defend them, but they will seek to perpetuate them with their through their progeny, and of course to perfect them as things go forward. So, but however, when you build an institution, it's not just something that's mechanical. You can't just be somebody with administrative acumen and therefore you have a good institution. According to the Weizner offspring, that's all you need. Somebody with administrative skill, acumen, administratively astute, good organizer, then you have a good institution. But that's only part of what makes a sound institution. In our culture, you must have an ethical foundation, a moral rectitude. That's the foundation of your institution. That's rooted in the culture, rooted in the cosmology, rooted in Nyame Wa Nyame, in Sheshe, divine order. And when you have that as your foundation institutionally, then you have a sound institution. Of course, what proceeds from that are people who are administratively astute, and they can organize and they can, you know, discharge their duties in a harmonious fashion, in a lawful fashion. But it's key to have an ethical foundation. If you don't have that, then your institutions become corrupt and they become oppressive to the people as opposed to serving the people. And of course, we live in a criminal enterprise, which is the United States of America, and we understand that very keenly. So when we seek to reestablish our institutions, they must be founded upon an ethical foundation and not a pseudo-ethical foundation rooted in a blackened-up version of Christianity, Islam, Judaism, pseudo-white culture, constitutional republic-type culture, and things like that. We need to found our institutions based on our own moral code, which is rooted in Ma'at and Ma'at. That's the law, the male and female forces of divine law. There's Ma'at, the male divinity of law and balance, and Ma'at, the female divinity of divine law and balance. And of course, we did a broadcast on the nature of the N'Toro, or the deity Ma'at, the male divinity, and his relationship with the female divinity Ma'at, because most people have never heard of Ma'at, don't even know he exists. So we had to go into, we went into detail about that. But again, the ethical foundation is key. So what we want to do here is we're going to look at the Mate Matie. As we said earlier, seven Adinkra symbols representing seven principal values of ethical existence. Obra Bo. Obra in Akan culture means life. Bo means to create. So it's a creation Bo of a kind of life. Obra, a kind of existence. And Bo Bra Pa means the creation Bo of a kind of life. Bra, which is good. Pa. When you have Bo Bra Pa, you have a good life, a good existence. You manifest Subine Pa, Pa, good, and Subine, character, good character. And our institution should be a reflection of that. You don't have a harmonious institution if it simply generates a great deal of money or kicks out a number of different people who are technically savvy, but they're highly trained, highly skilled, morally deficient, criminal-type individuals. That's not a good institution in our culture. Of course, in white culture, they don't care about that. As long as somebody's technically or, you know, advanced, then they feel like they did a good job. So what we're going to do is we're going to deal with some of those seven, three of them primarily. We want to deal with three primarily because they're talking about, this particular book is talking about ethical existence in general. We want to focus on those Adinkra symbols in this particular book that can be applied to institution building specifically. So if you go to the Mate Matie book, and for those who joined in a little bit later, we can post this link in the chat room once again, the direct link. Okay, so, and for those who are not in the chat room, it's the Mate Matie page on the website, on the ojirapo.com website. You can get to the book as well on the Nhoma page. So when you go to ojirapo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F as in free, O.com, you can go to the Nhoma page, the publications page, and that's one of the 15 books that you'll see. Click on the cover, it'll take you directly to the Mate Macie page, and you can download the free ebook version from there. All right. So we're going to go directly, we're going to go to the middle of the book. We want to go directly to page 26 and the Atinkra symbol, Odenchem Memu. And the Odenchem in our Akan culture and language is the crocodile. So Odenchem Memu is two crocodiles that are joined at the stomach. Conjoined crocodiles born that way. Of course, there are human beings who are born that way, conjoined twins and so forth. Typically, very often, colloquially, people will call them Siamese twins, but conjoined twins born, they didn't fully separate in the womb. Typically, when, eggs are fertilized, an egg is fertilized, it's identical twins, then if it's fraternal twins, it's two separate eggs, identical twins, there's an egg that's fertilized, then it splits. And they develop. But if it doesn't fully split, then those two individuals, the two spirits who enter the womb, they're inside of this one body. It doesn't fully split, and then they're born conjoined. So, Odenchem Memu, the cross to the conjoined crocodile, conjoined Odenchem. The Ebe, Divine Wisdom Teaching, says to us that the two crocodiles share the same stomach, yet fight over food. So when you see that symbol, when you see the two crocodiles sharing the same stomach, but they're fighting over food, that speaks directly to us. So we're going to read through this portion, and then we show how it deals with institution building. We say the Adinkra symbol of Denchem Memu, also called Puntum Punafu, Denchem Punafu, is the image of two crocodiles who were born joined at the stomach. It is said that although they are so joined, they fight over food. The result is that neither becomes properly nourished. Odenchem Memu shows the lack of wisdom apparent in choices made through misguided desire and gross selfishness. It portrays the failure to recognize the effects of one's choices on self and community. It is a call for respect. Respect in the sense that one should respect or review every thought, intention, and action so that choices made are in harmony with one's function in the world, and that said choices are not encroachments upon the proper functioning of those who are connected to you. And when we say respect or review, we're properly defining the term respect. To spec or spectate is to view something. A spectacle is something that's viewed. So when we say respect, that means you're reviewing something. So when you have respect for yourself, that means you respect or you review every thought, every intention, every action, and align them with divine order. When you engage that process, then you're engaged in respect or self-respecting or self-reviewing in the real sense. Going forward, we say amongst Afurakanu Afraikaitnu, African people, Odenchem Memu is representative of the condition within which we have placed ourselves and the effects that our choices have upon one another as defined within this condition. Because the two crocodiles are joined at the stomach, whatever nourishing substance is taken in by one crocodile will nourish both. Whatever toxic substance is taken in by one crocodile will poison both. Afurakani Afurakaini people are of the same species, race, biological, cultural group, as well as spiritually, joined together by that which receives and processes those things which should nourish us as a people. In this sense, the stomach represents our ancestral culture. Whatever we take into our body, culture that is nourishing, will nourish all of us because we're all connected. Whatever we draw into our body, culture that is toxic, will poison all of us because we're all connected as Afurakani Afraikaini people. We have ingested the insane notions of white supremacy and the corresponding misguided culture and false religious dogma of the whites and their offspring. Thus, we as an Afurakani, Afurakaini people have drawn into our body, culture, toxic substances, practices, and beliefs, which starve us and poison us culturally and communally. Weakness and the perpetuation of our own oppression has been the result, for weakness makes us vulnerable to infection against which we would otherwise be immune. We give some examples here, and we're talking about our culture and people in general here. So we give some examples. We say drug and alcohol abuse, domestic violence, homicide, suicide, self-denigration, embracing insane standards of quote-unquote beauty from Europeans, the adoption of insane beliefs, promoting Europeans as quote-unquote children of God and as the quote-unquote image of God or the divine. All of these are the results of Afurakanu, Afuraikaitnut, Africans, not respecting the reality that we have a divine function to execute in the world which unites us. When we understand our function in the world, we embrace cultural values supportive of that function. We are then able to make choices in life that are respecting or reviewing of that function, consistently and constantly reviewing, perpetually reviewing of that function. Such choices will not manifest as encroachments upon the proper functioning of other Afurakanu, Afuraikaitnut. Such choices will only embody the respect for one another and the whole Afurakani, Afuraikaitni body culture that Odentium Memu asks of us. So that's dealing with the culture in and of itself. And we talk about cultural mechanisms within our Khan culture that promote the respect that Odentium Memu deals with. So, for example, just as an example of how this principle operates, we understand and research exists that just as we have about 50,000+ black people who die of smoking-related cancers every year because we're smoking cigarettes, we're taking in this product that the whites and their offspring sell to us, we pay them money, and then we receive death in the process because we're brainwashed. So we're financing our own death. The money we make because we're working for the whites and their offspring, which is already a problem, they give us money, we return that money to them, they give us death in the process, working us to death, working our lungs to death, our heart to death, our bodies to death, separating us from our families. The same whites and their offspring who own the tobacco plantations that forced our ancestresses and ancestors to pick tobacco to support the plantations during enslavement before cotton was the big thing, was tobacco picking. Those same whites and their offspring have reincarnated through their descendants. They still own the same tobacco plantations, and now they're selling tobacco products to our people, and we are picking tobacco off the shelves. We're enriching the same slave master, literally, and we're still working our hearts, our bodies to death. So just like they worked us to death on the plantations to enrich themselves, they're using the same tobacco from the same fields to work our bodies to death and enrich themselves at the same time. And the same white Arabs and white Hindus and white Asians who worked as middlemen to capture our people when they could and deliver us to the Europeans for payment and working together with them during the enslavement process, the same white Arabs, white Asians, white Hindus, are doing the same thing now. They are the middlemen. They don't manufacture the cigarettes. The whites and offspring who own the plantations, they manufacture the cigarettes. But the white Arabs, Hindus, Asians, and so forth, they are the middlemen. They sell us the tobacco products. They're all throughout our neighborhoods, wherever we are in the country. In the blackest neighborhoods, you'll find them pop up, open up these gas stations, convenience stores, sell the tobacco, deliver us up. They're the middlemen who deliver us up to the whites and offspring as customers. We're enslaved. Our lungs are enslaved by the tobacco. And we're enriching the white Arab, the white Hindu, the white Asian, and the white European, just as we did hundreds of years ago. We're doing the same thing today when we're foolish enough to participate in our self-destruction. As we said in the document, when we align ourselves with our divine function in creation, that establishes for us our value, what our worth is, what our value is in creation. And then we only embrace thoughts, intentions, and actions that are in harmony with our function, and we reject thoughts, intentions, and actions and individuals and groups who are out of harmony with our function. So that's what culture is about. But we understand that process, And when you understand that process, you also understand the research that not only are 50,000 people smoking cigarettes in our community dying every year, we have about 5 million black people who are hooked on cigarettes right now. 5 million in America. That's more than the number of people who were enslaved throughout the entire 300-plus years of enslavement in the quote-unquote United States. Throughout the entire time, there was about 5 million, but right now, at the same time, 5 million of our people are hooked on cigarettes, so we're being enslaved of the same products right now at a higher level than we were back then. But not only are 50,000-plus dying, 10 years, that's over 500,000 people that are being wiped out, but even those who do not smoke, there are thousands of people who die from secondhand smoke, developing cancer and dying from secondhand smoke every year as well, because they live with somebody who smokes or works around individuals, works in an area where they smoke, in a bar or something like that. So they're dying from secondhand smoke. They never smoked a day in their lives, but they develop lung cancer and they die. So when you're connected to someone, if you live in a house with someone who smokes, you all are connected, you share the same air. However, when they pollute the air, then they're polluting the air that you breathe, and their decision affects you negatively. Just like the conjoined crocodile, the odentium memu. Whatever one takes into its mouth, it affects the other one because they're conjoined. If they take in something nourishing, it affects them in a positive fashion because they share the same stomach. If they take in something toxic, it's going to affect them in a negative fashion. If we establish an institution and we take in cultural values from the whites and their offspring, we try to teach pseudo-spiritual values and brainwash our people away from their actual function, then they won't value what their function is. They won't value the institution. These are the kind of Negroes who would seek to bring the whites and their offspring into the institution, to bring homosexuality, this sexuality into an educational institution, a supposedly Afrocentric institution. Or if you are dealing with teaching methods of food production and preservation, these are the Negroes who will say, well, it's okay to bring in these GMO seeds because surely the whites and their offspring would never give us anything that's poisonous or toxic. Surely we can, you know, purchase these seeds and teach agriculture through this process. Or bring the whites and their offspring in to teach us how to use chemical fertilizers on the soil and so forth. So when you don't understand your culture, your institution will become corrupt because you will, whatever you bring in from that's toxic will affect everybody who's associated with the institution. That is unethical. It's not in harmony with order. It's not a reflection of divine order, so it is therefore disordered and unethical. So when you see the odentium memu, I think, symbol, and it's something that you would even paint, for example, on the wall or over the doorway entering into an institution, for example, to remind the children, remind the adults on a consistent basis this important value. If you don't have that value and it's not incorporated and inculcated within you in your consciousness on a conscious level, then you will make decisions and make mistakes that are not only destructive to you, but destructive to everyone who is connected to you, including the institution that you have established. So that's a key principle that we must understand when we're talking about institution building. If you don't understand that principle and you're trying to establish and restore a nation, then it's going to be corrupt from the foundation and it will crumble and will be open and susceptible to infection, to infiltration by the whites and their offspring, directly or through their agents, their proxies in the community. That goes to the next piece. And we started with the Odentium Memu. We're going to go back one chapter. This is on page 20, and this particular value, we're going to read about it, but then show how it relates specifically to institution building. It's B and copy. So that's page 20. And before we get there, I want to make sure we didn't miss any questions or comments in the chat room. If you have a question or a comment, if you want to interact in the chat room, you have to log in with a username. If you don't have you can't interact as a guest. You can read it as a guest, but you can't interact. If you want to log in and interact, you can create a log username very quickly in BlogTalk so you can interact. On the phone line, if you have a question or a comment, you can hit the number 1 and we can see that your hand is raised and we can connect with you. We see it looks like we have one caller, so we'll take this call before we go to the next piece. Michiavo, you had a question, comment?
Yes. So in regards to the institutional building, from what I find in history, even with, I don't like to bring him up again, but always history has been recorded, with Marcus Garvey, with his movement and with UNIA movement, the challenge that he faced, that he said that he couldn't take it much further, or it couldn't go any further, and it can, because he find that it was some disorder amongst his movement with his people, his followers. And from what you've been referenced, it's because there is no set of, standards or a sense of, that's what I'm trying to get at, in regards to the institution, because a lot of people were following other pseudo, you know, religions at the time, or, you know, following the whites and Osman because they got their mindset. I'm trying to explain is that one of the few things first in regards to the institution from what you said earlier?
Right. So what you're referencing is how they were able to destroy the institution that he was establishing, major institution.
Well,
and
it
movement.
Was not more destroyed, but it's like a lot of things, corruption started to go on during the movement before the whites and the officers sent their agents to really, you know, shamble it in a way. But really, it was the people that really play a part of, you know, a sense of, you know, making the UNIA at that time start to crumble a little bit while he was the one that was
right.
running it. So I'm trying
right.
to say it's because a lot of people taking money, some of them try to, like I said, live it up with the Jones, or, you know, act so that they're better than the next one. You know, all these little scenarios really caused the,
exactly.
the shame. So at times, during that time, he tried to build an institution, a learning institution to change the mindset, because he's seen it during his movement that this is what the problem, dilemma. So I'm trying to
exactly.
bring reference is what you said earlier about standard. I don't know if that's what you said, because I kind of missed what you're trying to get at. But go ahead, you can answer it.
Right. No, I understand. I appreciate that. That's yes. So when we talked about the ethical foundation, that needs to be we must have a sound ethical foundation to build an institution upon, including a movement, which in and of itself is an institution as well. It was wanting in that regard, because we had already been brainwashed
yeah.
white culture. Now there are certain differences. First of all, people need to understand when we think about figures in our true story, sometimes we don't focus on what was going on at the time. We look back and say, you know, the large mass movements and things like that, and how people were moved. Marcus Garvey was in his 30s. He was a young man when he had this worldwide movement. He was in his 30s going into his 40s and had millions of people. Same thing with Malcolm X, for example. He was assassinated. He was only 39.
Yeah.
So when he started getting popular, he was in his early 30s. He was a young man. Martin Luther King, even though he was engaged in that, you know, Eurocentric nonsense, he was assassinated when he was 39. So when he got popular a few years before he was assassinated, he was a young man in his 30s. Now, how many young men in their 30s right now, somebody's 32, 33, and said, hey, I got the key to a worldwide movement. Hey, we need about 20 million people. Follow me. I got the plan. You know somebody 30, 31 does not have the plan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They don't have that kind of experience. But these were worldwide movements. Now, so we need to understand that. And there wasn't a lot of precedent set for something that large in that sense. So he was a young man. Plus, but there was a difference. There was an advantage to the extent, like we said in a previous broadcast, that at that time, so-called 12,900s or 1910, 1920, 1925, and things like that, the people who were alive at that time, some of them were old enough to have been enslaved literally and lived before emancipation, so-called emancipation. If they weren't old enough, they had parents who actually lived on plantations and were whipped and tortured by the whites in their offspring, or they had grandparents, but they knew who the enemy was and is. They weren't confused about that, typically. They just came out of enslavement. They knew who the enemy was. So if somebody said, listen, we need to get away from these crackers, people were all ears. Of course, nobody wanted to be around the whites and their offspring. There was Jim Crow. There was lynchings on a regular basis. Just like there are lynchings today, every 28 hours, a black male is murdered by a cop in America. There were lynchings in the same way back then on a regular basis. So we weren't confused, like, well, you know, actually, most white people are our friends. We weren't confused about that. So when somebody said, listen, we need to separate from them, they're evil. We had experience and we weren't sufficiently brainwashed enough yet to reject that notion because we knew it was true. Secondly, when somebody said, hey, not only do we need to separate from the whites and their offspring, but we need to go back to Africa. We need to have a Back to Africa movement, and we need to go there, reestablish ourselves on some land, and build things for ourselves and take care of our own affairs. If you say that to somebody today, they're like, nigga, you crazy. What are you talking about? Africa. You know what I'm saying? But back then, it wasn't far-fetched at all. Number one, they weren't so far removed from the continent that people had, they could remember great-grandparents, and they said, well, your great-grandmother was from Ghana, or they were this, or they were that. They were Gullah, whatever. But there also was already a couple of movements that had already begun. Europeans in America had already established Liberia. Europeans in Europe had already established Sierra Leone. So this notion that you could get up and go to the continent and find a place and build, that was already happening. Black people had already left America, went to Liberia, and began to build things there. Now, of course, they took that brainwashed mindset, and they began to imitate the whites and their offspring and went there, and some of them were foolish enough to begin to try to force the native people to embrace Christianity and white values and cause a great deal of conflict, which, of course, the whites and their offspring understood that would happen, and this is why they set it up in that fashion to create even more conflict between our people. But the notion that, hey, we should go back to Africa and establish something, not only was it a possibility and not far-fetched, it was actually happening. And not only was it happening, people in this country could see, people in this country in the Caribbean as well as people, black people in Europe could see that Europeans as well as white Americans were actually supporting the colonization of Liberia and Sierra Leone. So when you have that in place, and it's not far-fetched for the people, number one, and number two, you also have the reality that black people understood that these are our enemies, the whites and our offspring are our enemies, and they couldn't wait to get away. If they could just find a vehicle to do that, then it wasn't far-fetched. So a young man with no experience of, you know, organizing millions of people could get that going even without the internet, without, you know, social media, and still organize people, millions of people around the world, because people were suffering under the whites and their offspring, and they wanted to do something different. They yearned for that. But again, this ethical foundation, he was a Christian, and he had those Christian values. One God, one aim, one destiny. Part of that comes from Christianity. Part of it comes from the influence of Deuce Muhammad, who's a Muslim, who also influenced Garvey as well. So that rallying cry of one God, one aim, one destiny, that comes directly from the whites and their offspring. Now, he didn't have that understanding at the time, but that's an Islamic monotheistic foundation for what you're doing. That most of the people were engaged in some form of Christianity or Islam or some other pseudo-religious practice, not grounded in our traditional practices, even though people were involved in that, people in Jamaica, people in South America, people in the Caribbean, people in North America and so forth, and in Europe, holding on to traditions in their families. But some people were ashamed of those things. They were taught that that was inferior, that was primitive, we needed to move on. And back then, that was like saying, hey, we need to get with the modern times, which 1914, 1920, the the modern times at that particular time. So we're rejecting our own ancestral culture and ethical foundation and overlaying that with a perverse foundation. Of course, things begin to corrupt and break down. There are mechanisms within our ancestral culture that can keep people in line, keep people in check, keep people focused on the mission, valuing the mission based on the function they came into the world to execute, not just based on we're being oppressed and anything that's an alternative is better than this. But if you haven't changed your mindset, as soon as you free yourself from that oppression and you get free and a little bit open, then everything that you've been conditioned to be is going to manifest, and you begin to treat your brothers and sisters in the same domineering and corrupt fashion that the whites in Arab Spring do. And that was manifest in Liberia when our people began to do that. So at best, even if Garvey would have been successful, what you would have had is a bigger Liberia. The same project and the same thing that unfolded in Liberia with the Americo-Liberians and the conflicts that jumped off, of course, fomented by the whites in Arab Spring, would have had that on a larger scale because people had not restored their ancestral consciousness before they moved forward in this fashion. So, yes, this is why we're talking about this. If you're going to institution build, we need to recognize Sankofa, return going grass from the past to understand how to move forward in the present and into the future. We need to understand if you're going to nation build, which we are, establishing institutions, they must be established upon firm ethical foundation.
And another thing, since you brought up the colonies, Sierra Leone and Liberia, it isn't ironic for most of our people that even building nationhood, and they say they migrate back to those colonies that the U.S. or most of our people participate in regards to slaughter some of our people to create that as a colony. Wouldn't that be saying most of them that even go that direction to go back there? Wouldn't it make sense most of them try to run out any of the whites or the offsprings off of those areas, since people are aware that those are colonies that's still controlled by the whites and the offspring?
Right, and in fact, I mean, it's the way they established it, of course, the way they talked about that, on one hand, they're trying to pretend like they're being magnanimous and just wanted to restore the people and all this other stuff. They wanted to control the resources. They wanted to create a buffer between themselves and the people, native people on the continent. So they send our people back, create all kinds of divisions, send the kind of people back who are already brainwashed. Of course, you have some black nationalists and other normal people in the mix, but typically the way they establish government, the way they move forward, the way they, you know, levy taxes and different things on native people and so forth, that was going to lead to a great conflagration, warfare, and everything else. And the whites in Arab Spring understood that, and this is why they set it up in that fashion, so that it would create that kind of conflict. So the major conflict that the native people would have would be with us, as opposed to turning all that firepower on the whites in Arab Spring and keeping them away from their resources. So when they see us coming, even today, they still have those memories are fresh. This is not, you know, 1847, you know, those are a few generations back. We have, some of us have great-grandparents who we've seen who were born in the 1800s. So those wounds are still fresh, and when they see us coming now, they've been looking at a miracle Liberian, another one coming, you know what I'm saying, trying to take over. Or some of us coming to Sierra Leone or something like that, saying that, hey, this was something set aside for our people. Maybe we should go back here and do something. Unless we repair that damage ancestrally through ritual practice in connection with the people there, showing that we are, even with our people there and our people here, we are Odentia Memu. We're joined at the stomach. What nourishes us nourishes them, what nourishes them nourishes us, which poisons us poisons them, and that which poisons them poisons us. So once we can understand that, then we can move forward in a newly formed, restored, harmonious relationship. So when we go to different places, we can move forward in that fashion. But until that happens, and it will happen once the more people get involved back in their ancestral culture, which they will, and this is the movement that we're part of, until that happens, then Yes, when people go over there, that those same wounds will be open and the same kinds of disorder will manifest. But we will address that. We're addressing that through this kind of institution building right now, just through the institutions of transferring knowledge and education so people can realign themselves.
All right, Madasa, thank you very much for answering my question.
And Yaseda, and Madasa, for the call. All right. So we're going to get to the second piece that we wanted to get to on page 20, B in copy. And B means someone. Ka can mean to bite, or to attack, or to bite. Nka means to not bite. And then B, or B means someone. So it says B nka B. Someone, don't bite one another. Bite not one another. Don't bite or attack one another. So when you see that symbol, actually it's a artistic rendition of the Adinkra symbol B nka B. It's composed of two fish. Each has the tail of the other in its mouth. If you've seen two fish that grab a tail and they start swimming around fast in a circle, and they're holding on to the tail of the other one, and they just keep going around in a circle. It is symbolic admonition against biting or attacking one another without justifiable cause. And this is directly related to what the caller was just talking about. We should not have been biting one another. It forces one, and it's a continuation of the Odinshin Memu. You have Odinshin Memu where you're showing that you're joined at the stomach. So you should be nourishing yourself, and when you nourish yourself, you nourish the other person who's connected with you. Now we talk about those who you're connected to, you should not be biting one another because, as we learned earlier, we're actually joined at the stomach. It forces one, it's an admonition against biting, attacking one another without justifiable cause. It forces one to look within in order to assess whether an action or reaction is rooted in justice or misperception. As a representation of apurai kanu, apurai taitnu, this shows the lack of wisdom in what is routinely referred to as black-on-black violence. The two fish are from the same species, race, biological, cultural group, and spiritually, and thus exist with similar needs. It is thus futile to turn on one another without just cause, when we can employ that same energy towards the pursuit of what our unique group needs to function properly in the world. So this end, B and Kabi also teaches us to recognize our true enemies. And by the way, when they talk about Odinshin Memu joined at the stomach, it's the same two crocodiles. They're from the same species, same race, cultural group, spiritual group, from the same mother. Brainwashed Negroes will say that the two crocodiles joined at the stomach represent unity and diversity and the unity of all races and we're all connected. That's foolishness. These are two crocodiles. It's not a crocodile and a zebra. It's not a crocodile and an elephant joined. It's a crocodile and another crocodile. It's the same two entities who were born out of the same womb. So we're talking about the same race, the same people. It's not talking about multiculturalism at all. So then we get here to this end. B and Kapi also teaches us to recognize our true enemy. Recognize who to bite, quote unquote, or attack justifiably. This recognition is only possible when we understand that justifiable biting or attacking is not only lawful, it is absolutely essential to the preservation of order. So we talk about further in that piece, talking about the difference, the functions in the body, how certain cells can be become cancerous and seek to destroy the entire body, and justifiable biting, ka, is warranted, and not only is it warranted, it's our responsibility to destroy those who try to destroy us, and so forth. Then we go into detail here about when we study true story, we will find that for over the 12,000 years, Apurai Kani, Apurai Kani people have been attacked unjustifiably by the whites and their offspring, That's white Europeans, white Americans, white Arabs, white Indians, white Asians, and so forth. We have been, are now, and will continue to be at war with the whites in Arrow Spring until they become extinct. The nature of the character of the whites in Arrow Spring is that of disorder, and it is their nature which has driven them and will continue to drive them toward their maniacal goals of world domination. It is the inherent spiritual and physiological deficiencies of the whites and their offspring which has placed them outside of harmony with divine order permanently, thereby earning them the dubious status of being the enemy of all Akurakanu Akuraikaitu. That's not a good status. That's a dubious quote-unquote status, because that's what they really are. They're spirits of disorder. This is because the nature of the character of the Akurakanu Akuraikaitu is that of divine order. Our civilizations are rooted in the divine order. Our religious practices are the means by which we embrace divine order by incorporating divine law in our life, activities through ritual, and restoring divine balance in our lives through ritual when we temporarily circumvent the law. By contrast, the nature of the whites and offspring is that of disorder, which by definition is in direct conflict with Akurakani Akuraikaitini culture and people. As a global minority, the interaction of the whites and offspring with the global majority Akurakanu Akuraikaitini is analogous to cancer cells operating in the body of black humanity since their first contact with us millennia ago to this very moment. The whites and offspring have moved throughout the Akurakanu Akuraikaitini world, community, body, consuming and destroying its cells / people whenever the opportunity appeared. This destruction takes the dual forms of military attack and cultural, religious perversion. The whites and their offspring realized that in order to totally dominate the Akurakanu Akuraikaitini people, they could not simply assault the physical, but they had to also seek control over our minds as well. And this is done, of course, through the pseudo-religion. And then we talk about, of course, we have an immune system, so we destroy those cancer cells and restore order to our bodies. And we go into some detail about that further in the text. So this admonition against not biting one another, that's key to institution building, institution sustenance. It's not just about not being divisive. There's nothing wrong with division, but we're talking about not attacking unjustifiably one another. And the only way you can do that, the only way you can unjustifiably attack your brother, attack your sister, you're establishing a nation, establishing institutions, trying to move a nation forward, and then there's conflict. The only way there can be conflict is if there's not a firm ethical foundation laid, rooted in divine order. That divine order is predicated upon the fact that every single Akurakanu Akuraikaitini person has a specific function that they were assigned to execute in the world by the Supreme Being. If everybody respects the fact that that's true, number one, that means everybody has value. Your worth, your value is determined by the function you came into the world to execute. Your heart pumps blood. That's its function. So its value in the body and its worth is determined by what its function is. Liver oxidizes blood and so forth. That its function determines its value. Its worth is determined by that function. The lungs breathe air. Their functioning in the body determine their worth, determine their value. So first you need to understand that you have a function in the world. If everybody understood that every single Akurakanu Akuraikaitini human being in the Omai, in the nation that we are restoring, actually has a divine function that was assigned to them by the Supreme Being, they know, number one, they actually have value. Nobody is valueless. As long as you have a krawa, a soul, a divine consciousness, a divinity that dwells within the head region, you have value because you have a function. That's number one. Number two, what is that function? And when you understand what that function is, then you can see how that function is interdependent upon the other people in the nation because they have their own function as well. Every organ in the body has a function, but their functions are interdependent. They're interrelated. So then you can see that not only the person has a function, what is their function, and how can it fit within the whole of the nation? So but people have names that reflect their function. And when people respect the people and utilize their ancestral names that reflect the function, they help the person to align with that function and be reminded of that function every time they speak their name. And that reverberates throughout the entire community from the time the person is born and throughout their lives. So just by virtue of the fact that we're using ancestral names, are constantly reminding everyone in the nation that every single person in this nation has value. They have a divine function, and then you give an insight into what specific kind of function they are to execute. And then when you see what kind of function they are to execute, then you can also determine through experience and through wisdom what dilemmas may arise with this kind of person because they have a certain kind of function, but when these kind of people get out of harmony with their function, they become explosive. When these kind of people with a cooler energy get out of harmony with their function, they become internalized, introverted, and they cut themselves off from people. So you can expect that kind of thing if they get out of alignment, and you can mitigate those responses in a preventative fashion by understanding who the person is, what their function is, and so forth. So this is why we deal with ancestral ritual. This is why we deal with divination. This is why we have naming ceremonies, and this is why we have these various mechanisms in the culture to identify, number one, the people have a function. That means they have value. That means they have worth. And then what kind of function they have and what kinds of problems may arise and how to mitigate those negative consequences ahead of time. This is when you have a wise society, when you have ethical foundations rooted in divine order. When you have that kind of culture, then you can move forward with a mass movement that will be successful. As we said in previous broadcasts, we have not had a successful movement yet, except since enslavement, except for those Afurakanu, Afuraikaitnu, who were instrumental in ending enslavement, and those were the people who embraced ancestral traditions, listened to their cry, listened to the Abosom, to the Nsamampo, waged war against the White Nile Spring, and forced the end of enslavement, became Maroons, established their own independent nations in North America, Central America, and South America and the Caribbean. Those people established independent sovereign nations in these foreign territories based on strong ethical foundations rooted in Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshe, divine order. So, and then they were able to do that. So they're the only ones who were successful. Nobody else has been successful. Not even close. And we're not even close. We're not closer today, as we said before, than we were 100 years ago to sovereignty, security, and security within that sovereignty. We're not even close. We were closer back then than we are right now. So clearly, whatever people have been doing, and people are resurrecting failed strategies and saying, well, if we can just bring this program back, this is what will take us to the next level. Well, it didn't take us to that level previously, and if you're just resurrecting the same programming, then what do you expect to happen? We need to recognize and respect, review our ancestral culture. Many of our people claim to respect that, but in reality they think it's primitive, ignorant, and degenerate, and it, quote-unquote, needs to be updated. And in reality, what they mean is it needs to be dismissed, and we need to establish some Eurocentric culture that's blackened up, Eurocentric culture in blackface, and call it Afrocentric and move forward in that fashion. That's never worked and never will work, and that's actually the program of the White Snarl Spring. But we embrace our culture fully, and those who embrace ancestral religion, religion animates the culture. Culture, amamre, amain means nation, mere means way or manner, the way of the nation, the way of the people. You're going to do certain things, but then other things you don't do. Certain things you're attracted to, certain things you are repelled from. That's culture, the divine acceptance of order, the divine rejection or hatred of disorder. You accept those things, objects, deeds, entities that will harmonize your thoughts, intentions, and actions with order, and you reject, repel those things, objects, deeds, or entities that will otherwise cause your thoughts, intentions, and actions to fall into disorder. So you accept law, you reject disorder. You accept order and you reject disorder. That is culture. The only way you can have culture is to understand what order is. And you learn about what order is by attuning yourself with the forces for an order, the embodiments of order and creation, which are the Abosom and the Nananoma and Samapa, of course, guide us on how to harmonize with the Abosom. So religion animates the culture. The ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance, which is what Nanasom or ancestral religion is. Apurakani, Apurakaitni, ancestral religion, no matter what expression it takes, what ethnic group it takes on the continent or wherever we are in the world, it's the same fundamental principle. Religion animates the culture. So when you embrace ancestral religion, meaning you're embracing order, that's what embracing religion is. It's embracing order and ritually incorporating law and ritually restoring balance so that you can continue to embrace order. So when you embrace order and the ritual practices necessary to sustain that, then you animate a culture that's rooted in order. And then when you have a culture that's rooted in order, then you can build strong institutions because the ethical foundations are sound, because their roots are in order. So the ground is firm, but the roots go down deep and they reach down into the order, which comes from the religious practice. Okay, so we only have 9 minutes left in the broadcast. This was a shorter broadcast. We started a half an hour early. Again, Mikpa Ocho, we apologize for the last-minute piece. We were going to reschedule the broadcast, like we had to reschedule Jawada Monday night's broadcast this week to next Jawada next Monday. We're going to do the same thing for tonight because of scheduling and because of some things that have been going on as far as scheduling and stuff like that. We were going to do that, but at the last minute, we were able to go ahead and do the show, and we wanted to do the Egua show on Awukuda, on Akuada, dealing with institution building. We didn't want to wait another week, so this is why we started a little bit late. But we only have 8 minutes left in the show. We wanted to go over that information. You can, of course, continue to read the Mate Mate book, which deals with those seven Adinkra symbols dealing with ethical existence. We wanted to pull out those two, especially the Odinchim, dealing with the institution building because of the connection that we have with one another, and whatever we take in nourishes us, whatever we take in that's toxic poisons us, whatever we take in that's nourishing nourishes not only ourselves but all of those who are connected to us, which are our people. So when you're establishing an institution, we must move in that fashion. This is the philosophy upon which we established the ethical foundations for our own institution. So we talked about in the previous broadcast our Akongwa Suya institution that we began in Chicago, educational institution, the center of learning within Akongwa Mind, the Akongwa Nation of North America. All of the publications that we have published, the books, the 60-plus articles, all of the videos, all of the broadcasts and so forth, all the formulations come out of that Akongwa Suya institution. We relocated to D.C. a few years ago. We've been doing teaching class. We've done a great deal of publishing over the past couple of years, specifically released a number of books, and now we are moving towards establishing a physical space for our institution, the Akongwa Suya Dai. Dai means building, sanctuary, and so forth. So we will have Akongwa Suya in a permanent place in the D.C. area, but when we have classes and so forth, we will also live stream so people who are not in this region can still participate. So there are different things that will take place within the center. The publishing arm of Akwamumai, our Nhoma, our publications, our books, that will take place in the center. We will be able to expand that publishing activity and be able to begin to employ people in printing, in cutting, and, you know, shipping and everything else. And then, of course, in addition to the employment side, we also have the entrepreneurship side, which has already been going on. No kwade means truth. No kwade fo are those people who disseminate truth. That is our term for distributors. Those who would like to distribute our soft cover publications, you can do so at any time. You can just contact us. You basically purchase the books wholesale, and then you sell them retail wherever you are. And, of course, you have a 30% discount on your purchases. So this is where you make the profit, and you can generate additional income for yourself or just income in general if you are not employed. We need to have not only educational institutions, but have the capacity to employ our people or give them that option where they can come to us and be able to utilize what they study, what they learn, and employ themselves, generate income while they're serving the community, not just selling any kind of book, but information that will benefit the community, whether it's dealing with health, spirituality, culture, entrepreneurship. These things that are contained within our books can help anybody who studies them to better themselves and advance themselves, but they can also assist the individual who sells them to generate income. So that publishing, employment, entrepreneurship will be in the center, so it will be expanded. Of course, all of the classes, workshops, trainings based on the books, Oberima Afrakani Manhood, Fatasa Satem Educational Curriculum, 7-stage curriculum, 7 sessions of 40 minutes, and you learn how to become someone who implements those programs in various prevention and intervention settings and so forth. Those trainings, Akumasa, substance abuse abstinence, we have a method for that ritually, and many people have overcome their addictions to substance, drugs, and alcohol through our process, which is our ancestral process, which is your process. All the various classes and so forth will take place there. Then all of the ritual practices, ancestral observances, 7-year New Year celebration in September, the Apo observance in March around the equinox. We will have a conference which we plan to have on a yearly basis in March dealing with Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakani ancestor religion. That will be open to our people who can travel and come once a year around the equinox for that. So all of the ritual practices on one hand, all of the classes on the other hand, and training workshops, because people can not only study, but they can also employ themselves when they learn about substance abuse abstinence from a Afurakani, Afurakani perspective, then they can go not only get themselves off of drugs, but they can go and teach that in prevention and intervention settings and employ themselves as well. So we have a number of different things. If for those who are online, we have 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes left in the broadcast. If you would like to listen past 11 o'clock, which we'll probably just go a few minutes past 11, you need to call within the next 2 minutes and 18 seconds because the live stream on the internet will be off, but the people on the phone will still be able to listen. The number to call in is 657-383-0635, 657-383-0635, and you have 2 minutes to call in. So those are the three different areas, the unkom, the ritual aspects of the culture, will be taking place at the center in an expanded fashion. The classes, adeswia, the teaching classes, the training, and we also have trainings for behavioral health workers, human services agents, social workers, therapists, community support workers, teachers, people who teach drug prevention and so forth. We have methods, Sankofa Juma, which is the training, methods of incorporating culture when you're dealing with your clients to address the whole life of our people. So those trainings, as well as the Oberima Afrakani Manhood trainings for young men as well as adults, the Tata Satem Educational Curriculum trainings that can be utilized within Afrocentric school settings as well as homeschooling, day schooling on weekends in general. Transcarnational trauma, domestic violence. We have different things for, as well as all the classes dealing with cosmology, ancestral religion, health, aboankwa, which is ritual movement, to strengthen tone, stretch, balance, offense, defense, and so forth. So all those various classes will be going on at the center. We'll be able to expand and serve the community in a larger capacity. You can go to our website. If you want to support those efforts, you can support simply by purchasing the soft cover versions of our books, which range between $8 and $11. You will receive books and receive that information. You'll be able to study and learn various subjects, but at the same time, while you purchase books, you'll also be supporting the establishment of this institution, Akongwa Suya Dai. So, so far we've had a few people who have become distributors of the soft cover versions of the books. And when people see the soft cover versions, we print them in color, as we said, on our own printers in-house. And when people receive the books and then they show them to other individuals, people typically see them and are already interested, whether it's not just the vivid colors of the deities and various different things and the titles, but the information that we talk about. People see a book talking about Jesus never existed, Moses never existed, Muhammad never existed, and they see these various deities from Kemet with these names that have been corrupted into these fake characters. They want to know about that information. When they see the books are only $8, $9, $10, they only range between 8 and 11, the books typically sell themselves. So we're still working to acquire a property for this particular institution, Akongwa Suya Dine. So we want to get that before it gets off of the market. We've had a few people who have made purchases of books and donations and things like that. And we still, if you make a purchase of $15 or more, a donation of $15 or more, you will receive a book anyway. So it won't just be a donation. You'll receive a book for that donation, or one or more books for the any donation. You can go to we'll put the link in the chat room, the Akongwa Suya page, for information on that. And you can also go to the Nhoma page, the publications page on the website. So when you go to ogdirafo.com, ogdirafo.com, you go to the publications page, you'll find that you can order the publications, make a donation, or you see the Akongwa Suya page dealing with the institution. You'll find all the information about the institution that we are establishing this space for, to continue the work we're already doing. Of course, we will be doing the broadcasting from the institution as well once we secure that property. Everything that we're doing will just be able to expand, and the people will be able to come out, and we'll be able to serve more people in a greater capacity. Right now, what we've done is we've had to rent out different spaces whenever we had an event. What we want to be able to do is have a space where everything can take place. So not only can people come out, they can gather, they can connect, they can network, they can see other individuals engaged in the same study and culture that they're part of, and then their family members can see that as well and see that there's actually something going on that's of value. But then also the employment piece and the entrepreneurship piece, specifically the employment piece, we'll be able to move forward on that with regards to the publishing aspect and other aspects as well. When people begin to be trained in different forms of these different workshops, they'll be able to do some of that training as well. So that will be an employment opportunity as well. So we want to be able to do all these different things. So, again, Yerase, we thank everyone who has supported with donations and purchasing books. You can go to the website right now, ogdirafo.com, to the Nhoma page, that's the publications page. You can go to the Achedie page, which is the donation page, or the Akongwa Suya page, the institution page, and access that information. You can make a donation or make a purchase. We're going to continuously give updates. We don't have enough funds to acquire the property yet. We're not close yet. The property is still on the market, the one that we're looking at. So as soon as possible, we wanted to try to get it before the end of December, or really around the solstice, if possible. But still, we're still trying to get it as soon as possible so someone doesn't scoop that property up. So any support with the books is, welcome. Share the information, the books, with individuals that you know may be interested in this kind of information or be open to it. And that way it's a holistic approach. It's not just people going to people who know nothing about culture, never studied any of the work, and then say, hey, can you support this institution? All of the ebook versions of our books are free. Therefore, people can study and see what we have. They can download all of the archives from the broadcast and see what we have. And if they see value in it after they've already studied it, then they can make a donation or make a purchase, and then it's not coerced. Then it's natural because they see value, and then they can say, okay, this is something I can support because I know exactly what they're talking about. As opposed to if we just had a book and said, hey, you can't read the book, but pay me $30 so you can get the book, and then you can see whether or not you like it. So we always make all of our books available for free so people can understand what's going on. And we need to get this information out just in general to as many people as of our people as possible, wherever we are in the world. So we do that so that people can understand what's going on, see if they see some value in it. So share the information with individuals who may be open to this kind of information. They can study, they can read, they can learn for free. There's a great deal of information. They can be reading for the next month straight and never read the same thing twice or never listen to the same broadcast twice and get information, new information every day. And those kinds of individuals will be the kind of individuals who will more likely see value in what we're doing and support that effort. And if you've been thinking about purchasing some books, this would be, of course, a good time now because we're trying to get this property as soon as possible. So we will keep everyone updated. Check with us on our Facebook group, Akanto Nanasom. We are Afuraikaet on Facebook. You can also check with us on our Ning site, Afuraikaet.ning.com, which is our own separate social network, privately owned social network outside of Facebook. And we'll be more active on that soon. We hadn't been as active. We've been posting all of our broadcasts and so forth. But because of a lot of different things business-wise we've been involved in, we hadn't been as active outside of making sure that we kept everyone up to date with every broadcast and every release and information and answering questions, but we're going to be more active. We want to get more of our Facebook contacts on that. Facebook is shutting down certain groups unannounced on Facebook now, especially when they're Afrocentric and dealing with culture and so forth and not allowing the whites and offspring to be part of the groups. They're shutting down groups, but it's all right. We have our own social network anyway, so just in case they hit ours, we'll have something, so you can go to that group as well. And you get all the information there as well. So, again, Yedase, thank you. Thank you for the support. Please support our soft cover books and our institution. If you have any questions about what we talked about tonight, of course, you can email us. The contact information is on the website or hit us up on Facebook as well. And we will be connecting with you again on Joada Monday for Akanfo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan, Ancestral Religion. And again, Yedase, we thank you, and Yebechia Bio, we will meet again. That's up.